Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to another episode of the Dr. Supercoach Podcast. You're on again this week with JB, and I'm joined by Chizo. Chizo, you're on a roll. We cannot get you off of this podcast.
Mate, you should call me a barn me because I'm on a roll. I've come up. I can't even count now. I'm so excited. It's 25,000 positions in 2 weeks. Everything is starting to finally click. JB, and I'm getting really excited about where this season could be heading if things sort of track in the same direction for the next couple of weeks to the buys.
Well, I am very grateful I was allowed back on the podcast. Obviously, we yourself, Pistol, and myself all sat down and thought, JB, look, we think potentially the podcast is sort of weighing on you a little bit too much. Maybe step aside from there for a couple of weeks, get your rank right, make some positive trades, and then come back to us. So I got told top 10K or you're out.
Yeah.
So in the last 2 weeks, I've also gained 20K and I'm into the top 10K. So I'm allowed back on the podcast. And the podcast, as always, powered by Code Sports, is finally having me back on. I feel blessed, but in a way, I'm scared now that I'm going to – maybe the podcast is the problem.
Yeah. You just get – like, you stand a little bit too close to the flames. You sometimes get burnt. It was like Pistol trying to take over the podcast and be the host the last couple of weeks. He did his own podcast for Patreon, just did a solo, and his voice went. He doesn't realize how hard it is to host one of these things.
We are underappreciated for our hosting.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you. It is not easy guiding the other person on what not to say. All right, we're going to jump into some quick Cancer Council shout-outs. So we just have the two this week. Well, not just. We're very grateful to have the two this week. Jason Onus has said, I left the loophole C from last week on Marshall and was kissed on the cheek, I think that says. There's a couple of blurred out letters. So he's donated very graciously. And then we've got Duke, who bought into the Nick Dacos hype a little too much this week. GGJB. So in Team JB, we were having a chat about who would score the most this week, or who would be a better captaincy shout out of Dawson, Laird, and Dacos. I said Dawson. He said there's no way Laird and Dawson score more than Dacos. And I said, well, there is. And then they did by a lot. So I won that one. This way you don't mess with me when it comes to captaincy.
Well, we've had a lot of comments in the last sort of like 48 hours and even towards the end of last week, is there was no captaincy video and they had nowhere to go. And as a subsequent, very few of us got on the Rowan Marshall. Luckily, I listened to your advice in chat, but there's so many people out there that missed out because you were slack last week. going to like a friend's wedding. So terrible.
No, I wasn't slack. I drove the 10 hours to Victoria, to Melbourne on the Wednesday, and wasn't able to record my video. And, you know, attended a friend's wedding, then drove back on the Friday, and then just got home to watch Port beat the Saints, which was very good. But I did happen to jump into Slack with a couple of people asking me who I was going this week. VC Rowan Marshall didn't need to even suggest the captaincy option because Rowan got the job done. So very happy with those who jumped on board, but also very apologetic for those who were missing the video last week. It'll be back this week. There's no weddings for me to attend this week.
Okay. I won't tell you about mine.
Okay.
Get married to this team, JB, because I'm finally in the top 10K.
Well, I would have liked an invite, but that's okay.
Yeah.
no pressure. All right, so we do have a few talking points here. We're going to start off with the rookies. I don't think this is going to be a super long podcast because everything seems not straightforward, but when we start talking about our thought process, it should sort of map itself out a little bit as to where we're suggesting people go without giving generic advice. There's obviously going to be a lot of people in a lot of different predicaments with where they're upgrading and who they're upgrading from. So we're just going to start with the rookies and where we're looking to trade to this week or to downgrade to. And we should start by saying Carlton's Chincotta. If you didn't get him last week, which some people did, he's the clear, like, it's him, and then there's about 4,000 MCGs, and then there's the next guy this week. He's just a lockety lock lock. Did you happen to watch him play on the weekend?
I did, mate. I actually thought he was really good. The thing that kind of stood out for me last week, and one of the reasons I didn't want to go early on him, was mainly because, you know, Cowan's kept him out of the side up until this point. They've had a few return in the last, you know, 14 days. And so I really want to see what that mix ends up being. Like, Cowan was listed as a rest. And then it's just like, well, okay, well, now he's recovered. Does he come straight back in? What does that mean for Chincotta? It was just a few little questions that I had surrounding that. But I think based on the performance from his first 2 weeks, it's going to be really hard to remove, you know, his more mature body and attack on the ball for someone like Cowan, who's still like a new draftee, still quite young, only touches the ball half a dozen times a game, and I just don't think has the same impact as what Chincotta does have up until this point. So seeing that second game has made me feel a lot more confident in him being having that job security long term, like regardless of his scoring potential, which also seems to be pretty high.
Look, I respect Carlton a lot for what they've done. They've clearly backed the kid in after being drafted, have said, you know what, here's your role, here's your position in the team. Let's see how long you can hold it for. I think it really started turning against Cowan, and not to say he hasn't been brilliant in his role because he genuinely has, but I think the tide started turning against him when they were missing a couple of defenders, Doherty and Saad. I don't think Saad was in for one of Cowan's games.
Yes.
The last one. And Cowan just didn't quite have that. He didn't replace that at all, what those guys brought. Whereas Chincotta came in the week after and just replaced it and showed that he can be the distributor. And then they said, all right, well, now Doherty and Saad are back in the team. What can you do now, Chincotta? And he had a lot less touches, but kept at a really high efficiency, and instead had a lot more tackles, a lot more pressure acts, and scored his points that way, and showed that he just has that versatility to sort of switch between the two. So as good as I think Cowan has been this year in his role, I think this is really going to be, it's going to be really hard to displace Chincotta now. And what a lot of us in the preseason thought would be their starting go-to guy has now sort of come in, and I think he's going to hold Cowan back a little bit from getting back into the side. But genuinely, good form in the VFL. I think we're going to see Cowan a lot more in the future than Chincotta, but the Blues are trying to contend this year, so they're going to try and pick every, you know, able, warm body that's going to help them do that. So I'm very confident in that pick. So the next guys that we have here, I've got a list of three. Bubble Boys is Simpson for Geelong, Sam Simpson, who we've seen before, by the way. Angwin, who we've also seen before, and Tickle, who we've seen before. So three players who didn't just make their debuts but have played before. And do you have a sort of ranking, or do you have one player that stands out to you the most out of these three?
The player that probably stands out the most is Simpson. I think he's the most likely of the guys to have a spike score. And the fact that he's breaking into that Geelong side also makes me feel quite comfortable. The issue, obviously, is with these three players is none of them really stand out as a kind of an option that we can be super confident in. Like Simpson is playing for Geelong. Literally, I think I think it's Stengel might be out, who might be returning.
Stengel was a 3 to 5 week injury sustained on when Simpson came back into the side last week.
Yeah. So that's two of potential three to five weeks. So there's literally, you know, maybe he only gets another fortnight. What's that do to his potential cash gen? He's definitely playing his role well. So I don't have a problem with the role. It's just whether he's got the job security. I think he probably has the highest scoring potential out of him. Angwin, I would probably have ranked last just because I don't think that he has the role or the job security. So not the job security, the scoring potential, that scoring upside. Like he's probably just going to be another 50s rookie, which is we've got a plethora of those already. I don't really want to add another one at this point. So I'd rank Tinkle Miomo just slightly above him, just because playing the ruck, there's the chance that you can have that variance with an upward swing sort of game and have a bit of a spike score as well. But I don't really understand the Port ruck situation that they've got at the moment. They seem to be going with Tinkle, and then I saw on the weekend that Lysette played SANFL or whatever it is, and he got 6 disposals and 7 hitouts. I'm like, did he play one quarter was he terrible? If you can run me through that and what the implications of Lysette and Tinkle might be over the next few weeks in terms of him being a potential option.
Well, I don't think Lysette will play another game for Port.
He's done. He should retire.
I think he's just about done, yeah. And it's
huge news! Get Tom Brown!
I don't think it's really like it's not like Lysette himself has become awful and is no longer able to play AFL footy or anything, but I think it showed last season our best ranked midfield had Finlayson as the ruckman, and Lysette wasn't particularly close to that. That was actually the best ranked midfield in the competition for about 4 to 5 weeks when we made a good run to end last year. Now Lysette really, he's not the same ruckman. He's not a mobile guy. He's not an extra midfielder. He doesn't slot back into the hole and take those intercept marks like Finlayson did late against St Kilda. And he also doesn't chase down tackle and get little sort of act as a sort of ground level player when the ball hits the deck. He's really limited in his ability to do that. And I think Port have showed now, especially with Tinkle as well, that is how they play. That's how they like to be efficient in the middle. So Tinkle definitely does offer that. I think the only thing wrong with Tinkle is that he sort of, as he did this week, he sort of lost his job towards the end of the game because Finlayson is just slightly better at it, but he's also a much, much better forward. So I think Tinkle plays, he rucks the first three quarters at least, sort of in a rotation. But then whether he's even on the field in the last quarter is, I think, a question of the game plan and where the current score sits, pretty much. So I think he's even concerning as well. I think we'll see some low time and ground from Tinkle at times. I would say a low percentage chance at a tactical sub, but it's not out of the realms of possibility either. So he does kind of concern me for that. But his job security, I think, is rock solid.
Okay. That's super interesting because the job security thing was the part that was you're kind of standing out to me as maybe the big negative, but it's almost like his potential to be dragged from the ground and Charlie Dixon thrown in there instead in the moments that matter. It's almost like, well, why is he playing?
well, Finlayson playing ruck and Charlie Dixon rucking in the forward half and Finlayson sort of dropping back like Gorn and Grundy do when Melbourne play, I think he's like that's how he would likely close a game. If it's really, really tight and just have our midfielders.
Well, we saw in this game against the Saints, like Finlayson played forward for the majority of it, and then when it got close at the end, they threw Finlayson back, and I forgot that Tinkle was playing.
Yeah, correct, because he was likely parked on the bench for most of the fourth quarter. And I'm not going to, I don't think that's going to happen every week, but it will happen at times. And I think Tika was on about 50 odd or 60 or so in the third quarter, looking at another decent 80 plus. I was trying to find ways to get him in. And by the end of the game, I thought this actually isn't as flawed as what I would want it to be. So I actually rank Angwin slightly above Tika. Just because of Tickle's elevated price. If they were both the same price, yeah, I would obviously go with Tickle. But slightly elevated price, you're paying a little bit more for, I think, better job security, but also I think as questionable at times, scoring potential. And at that elevated price, I think it just makes it a little bit tougher. But Simpson is definitely my favorite of the three. And if you've gone early on Chincotta or you're boosting this week, I think Simpson is pretty much the only resolution to get,
by extension, I was just going to say,
there you go.
just to step all over you there, mate. If I can throw a curveball at you, if someone like Ned Long or Wagner is named this week? Are you still ranking Simpson as a clear number two?
You know what? I was actually going to get to that as well because I think Wagner is. I think Simpson's better than Wagner.
Yeah, and from a scoring potential, absolutely. But that extra 50K. In price, does that matter at this point?
Yeah. So the extra 50K, I think Simpson has better job security than what we give him credit for.
Yeah.
Obviously, Stengel's out for a couple more weeks, which is fine. But Geelong tend to do this thing with Dangerfield, Isaac Smith, and a few of the other players where they, when it gets to about this early stage of the season, they tend to rest players here or there. I don't want to count on them doing that, but Jack Bowe's also got a calf injury this week. I think it goes without saying that Geelong aren't always the healthiest team, but they are always healthy for finals. So as much as I don't expect to see Sam Simpson in any finals matches this season, although it could be, I do expect him to play probably up until the bye. I think they try and get him through to around that stage. They probably try and get five or six weeks into him. And in 5 or 6 weeks, he's already made the money that we need and he's out of our squad. So even if it's 4 weeks, he's bordering on, he's made enough money and he's out of our squad. So considering he's at an elevated price and he's going to get a good price rise from the 80 odd he got last week, I think he can just make that money real quick. So I would pick Simpson over Wagner, but I would pick Wagner over the other two with ease. And if Wagner was in this week, I'd be very much okay with boosting. So for those who already have Chincotta, which I do, if Wagner came in this week, I would boost into Simpson and Wagner over Angwin or Tickle. Well, at this point, I'm boosting into Angwin.
Well, let me throw another one back at you. We saw the Weedle get his first game. He's going to be on the bubble in 2 weeks' time. There's not a whole lot of other names in 2 weeks' time as potential trade-ins. Mm. If we see... So, like, I didn't go early on Chincotta for the reasons previously described, so I'm picking him. Simpson's probably going to be named, so I've got to pick him because we don't have a whole lot of, you know, Angwin. Wagner was not named last week, probably not going to be named again this week. Ned Long was not named, so he's probably not going to be named. Then I've got Weedle after that. So if suddenly Wagner is named this week, I'm faced with probably the three best rookies presented in the next 3 weeks unless someone debuts this week, if that makes sense. So... would you consider boosting to get those three rookies, or do you think that's just a bridge too far?
No, it's a good question. This is assuming Wagner's named.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, look, it depends on how you like. You would be double upgrading next week for sure.
Yeah.
So are you choosing to keep like a Hopper or something like that and a Setterfield to do this? Or are those guys going down, in which case you're fielding some of these guys? Mm. I think it's definitely team dependent, but I wouldn't think many teams could cop a triple downgrade this week and still be competitive enough either in their leagues or in their ranking.
Yeah.
Regardless of what they did next week. If it got you, if doing the triple down this week, see now... Now I kind of want to discuss, let me throw one back
so,
to you.
So to put it back in your court, just before you do that, it would be completely for bench. Those three trades would be not on-field options for me personally.
Entirely on the bench?
Yeah, entirely bench options.
Well, I think it's okay. If you've identified that money is that large an issue in your team.
Yeah, I'm running out of cash. I don't know how I'm going to finish this team if I keep trying to get guys like Sicily and Oliver and Dawson. I'm literally just going to get to like one upgrade to go and have to rely on Matt Johnson and Roberts to try and make money for me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do need to look at their sides and they will find themselves in a very similar position. Look, I think if you have identified that, it's fine. I think it's definitely doable. My question is, are you trading across someone like, and is it viable to trade across someone like Matt Roberts, who you mentioned, as one of those trades, thus netting really no money, but getting a good rookie in return who is hopefully going to, you know, profit the 100, 150K? Or are you exclusively trying to get rid of guys like Davey, I suppose, would be one, but like Wilmot, Fergus Green, those types of guys who are still playing, but have sort of reached their capacity.
The way that I sort of see it as it gets in the way of your upgrade cadence, and I think we should ignore the fact that, say, someone like Davey is a higher price than a Johnson or a Roberts, because next week none of these names are going to be putting 40K in the bank for us, and it's like, we should totally hold these guys. So if I'm going to trade someone that's not giving me points on the field and he's not going to give me cash by next week, I would be trading the guy that's of the higher price so that I can do more with it and upgrade my side faster. So faced with that option, I would be trading the likes of Tyler Young, Cowan, Davey, and letting the Johnson sit there for 2 weeks till he comes back, and sort Roberts out later, maybe in the buys when we have more flexibility, like let's say leading into round 12 or something like that, where you've got like basically nothing to do but to like some, you got three trades to use, and you might fix up something like that if something presents itself. I would definitely be trying to utilize the cash that Davey has made for me, so that I can upgrade and double upgrade next week. Because you're then faced with the situation of, I boosted last week and now I've got to upgrade, but because I didn't take cash from that, I actually can't double up this week, or I've got to take someone cheaper.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And you've raised an interesting point, which is the buyers. I just wanted to do a quick PSA for anyone listening. If you thought buyers were hard last year, look at our benches at the moment this year and tell me how we're going to get three or four or five rookies off the bench to sort of fill in for each buy like we usually do. I think, again,
it's not happening.
A lot of people are going, sort of entering fairyland with their upgrades and, you know, sidewaysing the guys. Like, for example, Darcy Wilmot, he's a consistent 60 or 55 plus, and he's not making lots more money, but he's not losing us any cash at all. I'm more inclined to just treat that as a week by week than to just quickly move him out as soon as possible, because there's every chance he's on my field during the buys. Or someone like that, for example. I completely understand getting rid of a Fergus Green, who's going to bleed a little bit of cash soon. I understand getting rid of players like that. I completely understand getting rid of a Davey, who is not making us any cash at the moment. He's 211K. But I think people are definitely jumping at shadows with some of the guys they're jumping off of. And, you know, Wilmot might not have been the best example, because I'll be looking to trade him in the next week or two as well. But players of that ilk, they might be players that save your bye week by, you know, getting you that 18th guy and another 60 on field.
Yeah.
So it's just something to monitor from now until the buys, essentially. So, you know, someone that Sam Simpson, in 3 weeks' time, if you're faced with, do I get rid of him for 80K or do I just hold this, you know, steady 60? What do I do? You might be coming up to it then, and the buys have to start entering our thoughts with our trading options, premium wise and rookie wise. Are these guys going to be gone before the buys, or do they need to last until the buys? Because they're completely different sort of discussions. Whereas Chincotta, I think, he could be either. He could make me enough money by the buyers. He could be a vital piece on field for the buyers.
Yeah. The only thing I wouldn't do is listen to the Supercoach gold or whatever it's called now, price projections for Chincotta, because they've got him averaging like 28, and over the next month he's going to make us a total of 100K and he's going to top out at 209.
I wonder if people actually do listen to that. Well, I wonder if people actually go to that and think this guy's not going to be worth it. I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not. Maybe that. Maybe this is
probably needs to change.
it's certainly an interesting one, and it's something that a lot of us are sort of burying our heads in the sand for. Like, oh, I'll figure that out later. But I guess the flip side is, like, we could sit here on our hands for the next 5 weeks and not trade these guys and be really slow with the upgrade, and then is that going to counteract the guys that have upgraded really quickly and then just happen to get lucky? Like Johnson comes back because he's only got 2 weeks of suspension. Like,
how unlucky is that, by the way?
I know. Like, strong tackle too. Like, he actually had some decent numbers on the weekend for a rookie.
Yeah.
But I guess the thing is, what I learned from last year is that sitting on my hands too long left me with too much work to do at the end. And like, if you're hoping for everyone to have bad luck with rookies come the bye and they don't, what's your alternative to get back at them? There isn't one.
No, there's
like,
not one.
Because their team's finished and you're just starting to finish upgrading. So it's like, I think I'm in the position for this year, whether I'm overcorrecting based on 2022's flop of a season for me where I played it too passive, maybe I'm going a little bit too aggressive and I've overcorrected, but I'm certainly coming into the buys this year with I've made sure that I've got a pretty even split with premiums. I'm hoping to be basically finished with my upgrades by maybe round 13, the way things are going. And if I can find a way to field 18 each week, then that I'll be happy. You know what I mean? Like, I would rather have, at this point, with the quality of the rookies on the bench, I think 17 premiums and a donut is going to outscore 15 premiums and bloody Johnson on field, Sturt on field. I feel like that's, yes, you've got 18, but I'd rather pay the money to the Cancer Council and score 100 points more.
No, I think you're right. I think pretty much the essence of your point here is that we don't stop, we don't sit on our hands, we don't stop our upgrade cadence just because we think rookies are going to be hard to come by. I think we still have to treat every week as it is and take advantage of the guys who do come along, because you know next week there might be a guy like I couldn't even tell you, but there might be a guy who we feel okay about going early on, and all of a sudden these issues aren't that big a deal anymore, and we're like, wait, why didn't we do those upgrades last week? Is it, we're waiting for who? And it's sort of like, I think it's easy to fall into that trap as well. So there has to be a balance, and I think the balance really comes when you start looking at who people are trading to, which is going to be our last point, which is, I'm going to let this advert cut me off. We're going to get to it in a moment.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, so Chizo, we look at upgrade targets now, and I see a lot of people throwing around, like, I don't understand how this is even possible, but a lot of people throwing around the Jordan Dawsons, for starters. A lot of people throwing around Clayton Oliver, obviously. He's had a couple of bad weeks, or one bad week, which has brought his score price down to 650K, which is arguably going to be one of the cheapest he will get to this season. And I know he's already owned by half the competition, but you've got others like Lachie Neal, who sort of copped a bit of a price decrease as well. Tom Stewart is 610K, so he's hovering, but he's still at the expensive sort of end. I don't understand how people are going to afford these guys. If we don't have them in already, which I don't have Jordan Dawson, I simply cannot get him unless he gets to a price that is affordable. And I understand the allure of getting someone who, you know, this great POD and he's playing so well in the midfield. He's got 150 this week. Like his three-round average is 125. His five-round is 133. He's been the best player in the game over the last five rounds, which yeah, I completely understand it. We want this guy, but we want full premium more. And I think people need to start being realistic with their teams and how many rookies they have making money. And start looking at someone straight away. 56K cheaper is Tom Stewart. So right there, we're looking at someone who could match the output or go close to for 56K cheaper. And that money obviously then has a value as to how you then spend that on the next guy. If you go cheaper than that, I'm not sorting by defenders here, but I know Sicily is around the 530K mark or just higher, 542K. Right, so he's another 70K cheaper than Tom Stewart. I think the question is, and what everyone's sort of weighing up right now, is how far down are we going to need to go to assure that we have the money to go to get to full premium? Are we looking at the 550K category? Are we looking at the 500K category? Where exactly does it stop? How far in advance can you plan for this? Because I didn't plan for Chincotta to come out looking like this. So, you know, my trade plans have already changed because this guy's probably going to get me a bit more money. So where, like, what sort of value are you looking at? I think Sicily and Sinclair, 540K a piece is unbelievable value. But, you know, people are still looking to trade in the Tom Stewarts and Jordan Dawsons. Is it possible?
It's a very, very interesting thought proposition here, mate. Like, this is probably going to make or break our upgrade cycles right now. That I personally believe that a combination of Sicily and Sinclair for 540 a piece, so that's 1.08 mil, is going to be better than Clary and a 400k or 430k defense, a 430k other player.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're using the same cash head to head, it makes way more sense to me to be getting guys that we know are underpriced. I mean, a name that you haven't even mentioned is Luke Ryan. His year has been phenomenal. He's averaging 120. So he is by far one of the better players this season. The fact that they're getting flogged and their system of coming out of defense means that he just racks up the pill. Like, his year this year so far is 171, 122, 105, 111, 93, run 20, 127. So you take out that 171 and he's still got a low of 93 and he's still scoring fantastically. So disregarding that 171, he's still got a five-round average 111.2. So I still think there is far better value out there than paying up and getting Dawson. Like, there's someone out there that's going to get Dawson and Clary for 650K each, and I can almost get an entire, well, at least a half a premium for the leftover change than if I went Sicily and Ryan. Like, it's just I come from the side of, if I have cash at the end of my upgrade cycle, I will buy the unobtainable. But like we saw last year when we finished upgrading, there were like Mills that we could never get our hands on. There was Stewart I couldn't get my hands on last year.
There's
players that if you don't get them at the optimal time, you just won't get them, and you have to be okay with that. And I'm in the position now that I don't think I can get Dawson or Oliver, but I've saved a boost at some point to try and get one of them if the rookies present themselves. Otherwise, I'm going to have someone cheaper at D6 and M8 to compensate, that it's going to let me finish my side faster and have an overall higher scoring team, I believe personally, because I'm not going to compromise that extra on-field position. But I guess that leads into something I think is like, a bit under the radar is that we're all running out of cash. And I think at this stage when the cash is really starting to dry up, we do have to penny pinch. I don't think there's any real way we can get around that.
I think we're very lucky this year as well. If we didn't have Sheasel, who's looking like a keeper, Jack Zeeble, who was extremely cheap, he was around 360K if you got him early.
Will Day was good when he came back, yep.
Yeah, 40K, he was about 450K. If we didn't have these types of guys just land on our laps, I have no idea what position we would be in. We would not be looking at the Sicilies, the Sinclairs and those types and the Ryans. We would be looking at the Caleb Daniels. Like, it is the further down you go, the worse it gets. So I do think there's obviously a balance in where you get this value. But people traded out Sheasel last week. How are they going to finish their sides? They're going to need to get him back in this week. So it's just it's very, very concerning. And I don't think it's getting nearly enough attention. It deserves far more than what it has received thus far. And we're talking about defense, one of the better positions in terms of value. So let's quickly tackle a couple more positions because I want to talk about the midfield and I want to talk about the forward line. So a lot of people talking about Clayton Oliver this week. Who in their right mind looks at their team and thinks, I've got the coins, the cash generation for Clayton Oliver? And there could be coaches out there. I didn't get Chandler. I didn't get JVR. There's a few guys that I missed out on that I didn't have faith in as a rookie. And I'm suffering for that cash generation-wise. There's a few other guys that I did hit very cheap, like Jack Zeeble, and that sort of evens the playing field a little bit. But I look at my team, and I think if I was trying to get Clayton Oliver this week, the pieces that I would have to move and the cash generation I would be left with and still needing four or five premiums is just way, 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 way too much. It's unrealistic. Even Sam Walsh, 612K, I understand he looks like a very good premium at the moment, 612K. You are paying 60K more for him than you are for Darcy Parrish, for example. We've got players like Jack Steele, players like Tom Green, still only owned by 31% of the competition, who I just think at their prices have to be. You're going to have to get one or two of these guys eventually. Not just like, oh, we'll just settle for one of these sub 600K guys and then we'll finish our team around it. I've got Tom Green and I'm getting Jack Steele this week and I'm worried I'm going to have to get a third guy around that price, like Parrish or like Zach Merritt, 580K. We're just going to have to stock up on them.
Like
there's not enough cash generation. We can't keep going for these big heads until they drop enough to become realistic.
These what heads?
These big heads.
Oh, big heads. That's the South Australian accent. Sorry, I thought you said something
else. Did you think I said cheek heads?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Like the cancer donation.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think this has turned more of a public service announcement to almost like a panic, like realizing
sound the alarms.
How little cash we have. Like my future after this week, my future cash like trade out options. I'll have this is a distinction I'll make. JB, the guys that I would hesitate to trade are going to be the on field guys. So like the McKennas and the Ashcrofts and the Chandlers that are totally fieldable options. I would be hesitating at just dumping one of those for the sake of cash generation because while they are topped out or very close to topped out, they're probably going to be handy for the points gen in the next couple of rounds. They're going to be super important. But like if I'm looking at my cash gen, I've got McKenna, Hopper, Ashcroft, Chandler as like really good, and then I've got JVR who's going to make like 260. Mitchell's going nowhere, Sturt's going nowhere, and then the new guys we're bringing in now are not going to get. So I've got four rookies to finish my team.
Yeah.
I've run next week and the week after trade sims of what I'm going to do, and I'll have 15 trades remaining with three upgrades and one boost left to do. And I'd love to have Oliver and Dawson in there, but over the next 2 weeks I'm going to have Chandler left in terms of like like maybe one on-field guy that I'm upgrading, because I know I've just said don't trade like the Ashcrofts and the Hoppers and stuff, but they're being replaced with premiums on field.
So don't downgrade them, upgrade them.
Yeah, exactly. So I just didn't want to contradict myself there. But like I'm literally going to have three upgrades to go, and Chandler is going to be my guy who's got cash to be used somewhere. And the rest are either dead rookies or guys I've just brought in the last few weeks that need like another month to be fat enough to trade. So it's almost like there's going to be a calm before the buys storm, where those guys that have been sitting on their hands and like, oh, you know, I want to hold some rookies for the buys, like people in like my position that have sort of been going a bit harder are going to hit like maybe round 10, round 11, and there's nothing we can do anyway.
So, for example, Connor McKenna, his break-even is 48. There's no Daniel Richard this week. You would have to be out of your mind to trade McKenna this week.
Yeah.
Like, he's some of the last remaining cash generation that we're going to have for a little while now, and he's never lost the cent. He even went up 4K this week following a couple of 50s, which preceded this week's 70. So he just beat his break-even this week. And now he's leading into, you know, Carlton, who concedes to halfbacks. He's got Essendon and Gold Coast. And
hey, whoa! What are you implying, sir?
I'm implying that Brisbane are a good side, and against a few of the middle table sides, with a break even of 48 and no Daniel Rich, there is just he could make another 25-30K.
Yeah.
And that could be the difference between getting, I don't know who's 500K at the moment, but you know, getting someone like that and then potentially getting Zach Merritt. It's something that we should
just to back you up. The two games that Rich missed earlier with an injury was 4 and 5, I believe. He played Collingwood, tough game, 86, really good performance, and then he played North, where he scored 55, but it was basically just not down.
Never got to him.
Yeah, so like the. When they flog teams, he's not going to put up big scores. But you would have to say in the next couple of weeks, he's going to be a really solid fieldable option. He's already averaging 71. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
If at all possible, particularly if he's on your field, like if you've got Zeeble and Sheasel back there, and for whatever reason he's D7, I think that's a different story. If you've got some sort of situation where you've got a couple of weeks planned out, and you don't need like an extra 15K or whatever it is. Like he's not going to stack on all this cash if we hold him for another fortnight. But I think the scoring potential he has on your defensive field, I think, is probably the most important part to what he's going to do for you.
Yeah, no, I do agree. So, look, I think that pretty much. It almost summarizes. Let's quickly have a look. Like we've mentioned, so in your opinion of the players that we've mentioned, defensive wise, I like Sicily and Sinclair a lot.
Yeah.
If you don't have Jack Seabaugh, I think he's still an option because he is a premium.
Yeah.
And
I still like Will Day if you haven't got him yet.
Yeah. So I don't have Will Day, and my only concern is when they're competitive. When they're in the game, even when it's out to, you know, 4 or 5 goals and it's staying around that point, Will Day is good. When they get flogged, he genuinely just struggles to put points on the board. And playing for Hawthorn, I think he's very much the opposite of his teammate Sicily, who when they get flogged, he tends to just go crazy. I worry a little bit if Hawthorn are on the wrong end of that for a period, that he could put out some bad scores. But again, his price is so inviting that like it almost doesn't matter. If he's averaging 95, including his spike games and his bad games, then he's averaging 95, and that's good enough for his price.
Yeah, and don't forget we've got a Sam Doherty that's being undervalued because
I was going to mention him. Yes,
well, we're just so on the same page today, mate.
We are. I scroll past him earlier. He's 509K.
Probably he drops a bit. 114. Yeah. So you might pick him up for what 505 next week, and we'll know like how that knee is going and. I liked his role a little bit better this week, I've got to be honest. I don't know if there was a change just because he was coming back from injury or what, but I think he's another one that's going to go completely under the radar. I mean, like I wouldn't say it was different. Like, he still got CBAs. Like, I want to say, like, maybe he was in 25% or 30% of CBAs. But there was a clear delineation. It wasn't like he was doing a couple CBAs, then drifting back for 10 minutes and then coming back for another one. Like, he sort of was, like, linear A or B, like, for extended periods, which I don't know whether that was just the eye test that I was looking at. I've got nothing to back that up, but I just felt like this is what I expected of him. And it's hard to tell when the Blues are absolutely flogging the Eagles as well. So we really need more data, but he could be an underpriced cheap guy. Absolutely, yep.
Definitely. Okay, and then the midfield, I spoke about Steele and Tom Green as guys that I really, really like.
I'm a bit iffy on Steele. Like, coming from like a medical background, I'm still personally really worried about that shoulder. And for some reason, 11 tackles hasn't quite convinced me. And so I see his break even of 126, and I see that as not, oh, I'm getting any cheaper. I'm not picking him for that. Picking him. I'm not picking him because I want another week's data on that arm is not going to fall off if a light breeze comes through.
Look, I would strongly advise if you have your reservations about Jack Steele, then the break-even of 126 genuinely gives you a free pass to have a look again.
Yeah.
I will preface that by saying it's against North Melbourne, and that break-even could just get blown out of the water, but that's fine. He's not going to go to he's not going to get a 580K or anything like that.
No.
He's not going to price you out. He probably goes to 550K at absolute most. On a really good game, and that is still extremely cheap. And for the peace in mind that it offers you, waiting an extra week, 100% advisable, worth it, all of that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm getting him this week because I think the options next week are still going to be existent. I'm not just buying every bargain guy a week early and then going, oh, what do I do next week? I still think there's plenty of names that I can look at next week. Whereas if you keep saving these guys, like this week you have Sinclair Sicily on a decently low break even. And if you didn't get Will Day, he's still on his low break even. Next week you got Jack Steele. And there's a couple other guys that I can't quite remember off the top of my head. But essentially it's like, what you're going to have to either start giving up on these guys or just admitting that you can't get them all. Or you're getting them in a slightly uncomfortable. Like I got Sicily last week on 110 break even, slightly uncomfortable, but I have that belief in him as I do with Jack Steele. So I think both ways, whether you're being a little bit more cautious or whether you're going now, completely accept ways to play the game.
Yeah, yeah. Look, at the end of the day, I think a lot of us are going to be buying the Cripps, the McRae's, over the likes of, say, a Brayshaw. Like, Brayshaw is, like, really underpriced, right? Like, he's had a massive downturn compared to last year. Sarong has been fantastic for Frio. And Brayshaw always plays that sort of defensive midfielder. Not that he's, like, super tackling, but he just plays backward of center. And that is obviously not going to make him as impactful as someone like Sarong that really kind of pushes forward. But what it does mean is that there is a guy that has gone like that 105 to 110 mark before that you can pick up in an absolute desperate situation for like 500K. So there are going to be guys that we can finalize our team with at some point. Like, I don't think we're going to get to the stage where we're literally picking 400K no names. I don't think it's that bad. No, but I think if you get, particularly if you just got Dawson, and now you're like, okay, now I've got to set up a plan to try and get Oliver in 2 weeks. I think that's really counterproductive for actually finishing your team as quickly as possible. In which case, I would be sort of, as we're talking about, JB, loading up on the Sinclairs and the Sicilies at 540 if you've already got the Zeebles and Days and whatever, And, you know, maybe Mills has a role change at some point. Instead of averaging 85 instead of 90, he goes back to those 120s, JB. Like, suddenly he's a guy that we're all over. So I think there's a world out there where we're going to have some underpriced gems. And they're the kind of guys that I look for at this up, like in the main guts of the upgrade season. And if I find someone that's an absolute bargain, like, say, Christian Petrarca, I know you wanted to touch on him, it becomes DPP, and then he's a forward. Yes, he's going to be fairly expensive, but he's going to be someone that you desperately need to get because there's no one that's going to be like really matching him if he goes at 120 in the forward line, apart from Taranto. But, you know, that gives us the flexibility to go to those guys. Whereas, let's say you got Oliver and Dawson, you know, that's great. And then suddenly I can push someone like a Zeeble to be like a floating guy if I can get like Petrarca or something in my forward line. Like, there's, it just gives me a bit more freedom.
Yeah, so I did actually want to mention Petrarca. 599K is probably the cheapest he's going to be for a while. If he does get that predicted forward status, which I know we don't want to play the game on projected forward status, but let's just say in a world that he doesn't get it, he's averaging 114. He's got two sub-tons, both of at 97 in rounds one and two. His Christian Petrarca is coming off a 167, so we know he can put points on the board extremely quickly. He's got a three-round average of about 130. He is probably in the conversation for a top eight mid anyway.
Yeah.
Getting on at 599K, if he does get that forward status in, what is it, 3-4 weeks' time? When does that happen?
End of round 11.
So if he does get it in round 11 in 4 weeks' time, there's every chance he's 630K, 640K, and no one can afford him. So I think it's interesting this week when looking at upgrade targets as to whether you go someone or try to reach up to someone like Petrarca, who at 599K, I know we're talking about value, is probably right on the brink of it. I think he's probably okay value right now.
Yeah.
If he's a midfield only, I think he's unbelievable value if he gets forward status. So I think we obviously don't want to trade anyone in based on if they get this status, if they get that, because if it doesn't happen, you know, we're stuffed. But in this instance, he's good anyway. So is that a consideration, do you think?
I don't like the idea a whole month away from the DPP changes making plans around DPP. Like, I would consider bringing him in if he got it, and I think that
DPP is kind of, in this case, like a bonus. Like, oh, I got this top eight midfielder, and now he's got DPP.
Yeah, I mean, if you're then doing head-to-head Petrarca versus, you know, like a Jack Steele, I'm probably still taking the 60K, personally.
Yeah.
Because I'm personally that much of a tight ass. When it is for like upgrading, because I want my last on field upgrade to be a Josh Kelly at 570, or you know, I can get Zach Merritt at 580. Like, I don't want to get to the end and be forced to pick the Andy Brayshaws that have had a terrible year and cross my fingers that that upside that is inherently there comes true. I would rather get to the end and be like, okay, boom, who can I pick? Jack McRae sort of had a turnaround. He's going 113 in his last three. He's only 590. Let's pick him. You know, like I would love to get to that stage as opposed to getting Oliver now and then being like, geez, I wonder if George Hewitt will become good again.
No, I do agree. All right, let's quickly... We'll quickly visit the forward line and just touch on who we think is good value. I don't know if anyone's even really upgrading in the forward line at the moment. We've just been so blessed with forwards this year so far. But obviously, Zeeble is still applicable in this conversation as well. I just also wanted to touch on Errol Goulden, which I think a few people will be looking at in the next week or so. His break-even is down to 98. That 47 falls out of that rolling average next week. So I expect him to have an uptick in price real quick. But he's essentially what his starting price was, which people were convinced was an unbelievable bargain. I still think it is. I still see Goulden as a keeper in my forward line. It's just whether you can except that if Sydney gets smashed, which they did against both Geelong and Melbourne, that sometimes the scoring is just going to be a little bit compromised then.
Yeah, yeah.
Against Melbourne, they got beaten by 10 goals. He scored 85. Against Geelong, they get smashed. He scores 47. In the games outside of that, it's a 115, 107, 102, 88, and 119. So I do think he's a 95 to 105 average for the season, with maybe one or two more bad scores sprinkled in. But I think he's great value in terms of forward keepers. But outside of that, I'm really not seeing anyone that I like the look of in the forward line.
Yeah, look, it's one of those situations where I think a lot of us have probably got Sheasel and Zeeble down back, or even you know, there's someone somewhere down back, and we're playing someone like a Chandler on field, for example, in to use my case scenario, and it gives us the flexibility to find the best deal in both of those lines. So if I find, you know, let's say Cornelio cops a knock and he scores a five. And then by the time he comes back and his price has dropped and whatever, I feel like that I would be comfortable leaving Zeeble as my D6 or D5 in this case with Sheasel there and getting someone like Cornelio if I didn't have him. Just as well as if there was someone in the back line of the same ilk, I would be totally happy having one of those guys in the forward line as a keeper to grab the best guy there. So when we're talking about the forwards, it's not necessarily because like all of these guys are pretty much the same value. Like Taranto's gone off the charts. Dunkley's as expensive as he started with. Rosie and Butters are basically the same price they started with. Cornelio, there's all these guys that haven't really shot through the roof. They're just going to kind of hover around this mark. But
yeah,
we're going to find at least one guy in forward or defense that is going to be the value guy that we look for, and we can play around that. It's less of a situation where we're sitting here and say, oh, what about Toby Green? He's had good 3 weeks, and it's less about that and more about who's going to be the best value that we can manipulate into our team. That's how I see the forward line with that last spot to be finished.
Yeah, no, I do see it in a similar way. I think, however, if someone like Gordon does appeal to you, then absolutely go for it. I have no complaints about having owned Gordon so far. He can be in and out of games, but he scores in bunches and has clearly a high ceiling, as he showed in his first two games at the AFL level, really. Okay, so lastly, just for the next couple of minutes before we sign off, Chizo, I just quickly want to touch on if you still are keeping Brody Grundy, if you've still got him in your side. Just a PSA, another PSA, I love doing these clearly. Please stop messing around in your ruck line. Don't trade him to Gorn. Don't trade him to Braden Bruce. Don't trade him to Todd Goldstein, who just scored 54 this week. Please just get in someone who isn't going to cost you any more trades. Just stop using trades on that line. I don't know who needs to hear this, but someone does. You got Witts, who's 10K more expensive. Absolutely fine option. You got Darcy, who's 50K more expensive. Fine option. If you don't have Tim English, he's 100K more expensive. You just can't afford him. You probably had to get him, you know, a couple of weeks ago or, you know, at the start of the season. So I would give up on that pipe dream. Don't just get someone who's going to make 100K and wait for English to drop. You pretty much like count yourself out of that. We do not have the money. So one of those options around a similar price, I actually like Jared Witts, to be honest. Really good POD, 9.3% of teams, averaging 111 as he did last season, 586K. He's very good value. So and has that amazing buy. So let's just stop, you know, mucking around in there, I think, Chizo.
Yeah. And you know who the second highest scoring ruck of the season is so far?
No, I don't.
It's bloody Sean Probably. Darcy.
Yeah.
But he's got a five-round average of 129. Like, if there was anyone that that just buggered us around this year, it's him. But, like, this PSA, I think, is normal. Not normal. It is unrequired because anyone that listens to this podcast already knew that we explicitly told you not to hold him once Gorn came back. Explicitly. Like, there was no, do we get rid of him? Or maybe I hold him for an extra week. He's got a good break even. It was, no. Once he's back, Gorn. Grundy, no. Not Gorn. Grundy. Grundy, Gorn. Not Gorn, Grundy, Gorn.
Yeah. Gone.
Yeah. Grundy is gone.
Grundy gone.
You got me?
Grundy's gone.
So none of this typing in podcast questions on Slack like, oh, what should I do with Grundy? Get rid of him. Simple. Like, he's literally precipitously going to drop in price over the next 3 to 4 weeks. Now is the time to pick the guy that you need to get.
Okay, just lastly, before we jump off, I know we didn't talk about who to trade out. We mentioned players like Fergus Green. I think obvious other players like Philippou speak for themselves. But essentially, at this time of year, I think it's super safe to play the break-even game. Exceptions to the rule are probably someone like Hopper coming up against West Coast this week. Very happy to hold him with a 90 break-even.
Yeah.
There's every chance he just resets his cash generation this week. If not, then he can be traded next week with no concerns whatsoever. But at the very least, he's not going to lose me 20-30K. So besides that, though, play the break-even game with your rookies. Don't overcomplicate it. Players putting out bad scores are generally bad for cash generation. So there was a few this week. So just identify them and don't be worried about getting them out. With that being said, Chizo, that's going to wrap it up for me, unless you have any closing statements.
Not at all. I absolutely agree with that last sentiment, that once their cash gen is dead, they're dead as a rookie, and just it's time to no emotion, just get rid of them.
Get rid of them. No emotion.
Yeah, they're not like family members. You don't have to think about whether to turn off life support. Just get them out of your side and start the upgrade cycle, because upgrade cadence right now is key to making sure that we are getting ahead of the pack. Like, my last 3 weeks of barnstorming rank has just been from not being dispassionate about who I'm trading out, what do the maths tell me, bang, 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 and just get on with the job. This has been a really passionate podcast, JB.
I love how straightforward you're being.
We haven't been on a podcast for like a month, and we think the same. We get passionate, we get riled up, and we do some
done.
Public Pistol just PSAs. Waffles, man. He's a waffler. PPPSA. Yeah, he does. He actually talks
like a lot. Like he just says a lot of words, and then I'm sat there like, I don't quite understand what you just said, but like you were super convicting, but I'm just going to agree, I guess. Like, you know, that Pistol guy, man.
And computer brain, we just expect that what he says is gospel.
Yeah, that's it. I trust everything, like, unconditionally, but he's probably... he gives me a lot of life advice as well, and it's all gone downhill, so maybe I should stop this.
Oh, God.
All right, that's going to do us. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in this week, and we'll catch you during the week and next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.